Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note this call is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to the President and Director Counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Ms. Sherrilyn Eifel. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone for joining us. I'm pleased to be part of this excellent lineup of speakers to discuss this urgent matter. Tomorrow, the Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on the nomination of Thomas Farr, President Trump's nominee, to serve on the Eastern District of North Carolina. Today, you'll hear about Farr's long record opposing civil rights, about how his legal career has been dedicated to opposing the rights of workers and denying African Americans full participation in our democracy. His record is repugnant, and it provides ample grounds to oppose his confirmation. But let me be clear, Thomas Farr is not just another conservative lawyer. He's not a typical nominee from a Republican president, and he's not just a lawyer who represented whatever paying client walked through his law firm's doors. His nomination is the culmination of a white supremacist political machine that kept the staunch segregationist Jesse Helms in office for decades, including through the suppression of black voters. Farr has deep connections to Helms and to his closest allies. Farr served as counsel to the Helms campaign in 1984 and 1990. The 1984 campaign used ads so racist that a federal district court once compared it to, quote, outright white supremacy campaigning of the 1890s. In 1990, the campaign sent postcards to mostly African-American North Carolina voters suggesting they were ineligible to vote and that voting could lead to criminal prosecution. Farr defended the campaign when the Justice Department filed suit for violations of the Voting Rights Act. And that campaign, some may recall, was also infamous for the famous White Hands ad used by Jesse Helms as a way of making a racial appeal to voters in his race against African-American Harvey Gantt. Farr's mentor was Tom Ellis, his longtime law partner and the architect of Jesse Helms' political success. Among other acts of racism, Ellis opposed the implementation of Brown versus Board of Education and directed the Pioneer Fund, which funded research into theories that African Americans were genetically inferior. All of this about Ellis's record was well known when Farr chose to join his firm and associate himself with Mr. Ellis. And together, Farr and Ellis appeared in litigation defending voting rights violations against African Americans. That Farr would now be made a federal judge is offensive to African Americans in the Eastern District and to all people who depend on independent and impartial courts. And it's made worse by the shameful fact that the Eastern District has never had an African American judge. Think about that. The district is nearly 30% African American. And yet in 143 years, it has not had a single black federal judge. President Obama nominated two African-American women to this very seat, but both were blocked by Senator Burr. And now President Trump is instead appointing a longtime ally of arch-segregationist Jesse Helms. It's offensive, and the Judiciary Committee should reject this nomination. It's particularly offensive in this moment, when we are engaged in a national conversation about the rise of white supremacy. I'll turn this over to Kristen Clark, who is the Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Sherrilyn. My name is Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. At every level in North Carolina, systemic discrimination for too long has suppressed the rights of African Americans and other racial minorities. We have seen this with the vacancy in the Eastern District, and we have seen this in elections throughout the state. Just this summer, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law reached a settlement in a federal voting rights lawsuit filed on behalf of African American voters in Jones County, North Carolina. This case was the first brought under the Voting Rights Act in 2017 and sought to address the method of electing the County Board of Commissioners under a system which diluted the voting strength of African American voters in violation of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Due to extensive racially polarized voting in Jones County, North Carolina, no African-American candidate had been elected to the Jones County Board of Commissioners since 1994. This case was settled right in Thomas Farr's backyard. While we are pleased that we reached a settlement in this case, it underscores just how strong racial discrimination is today in the Tar Heel State. The way to address that is not to confirm a judicial nominee who has dedicated years of his career to supporting voting discrimination, but instead to appoint and confirm nominees who are fair-minded and within the mainstream. The fact is that Thomas Farr has spent his career representing lawmakers and entities that suppress and dilute the African-American vote throughout the state of North Carolina. It would be difficult to identify an attorney in North Carolina whose career has been more closely associated with voter suppression and with efforts to attack the rights of vulnerable citizens. In the last three decades, Farr represented the reelection campaign of Senator Jesse Helms. He was part of the defense against the Justice Department involving complaints of voter intimidation after African Americans were misled to believe they were ineligible to vote and would be arrested if they did vote. And he has also defended suppressive voter ID laws. In one of his earliest cases laying the groundwork for a decade supporting voter suppression, Farr represented plaintiffs in Shaw versus Hunt, a gerrymandering case that ultimately went to the Supreme Court. Although Farr ultimately was unsuccessful in representing his clients, the overall case was partially successful in dismantling a redistricting plan that was aimed at enhancing the voting power of African Americans in the state. Years later, Farr was opposing counsel in a 2015 case with a coalition of civic organizations and voters against state officials responsible for elections, public assistance programs, and motor vehicle services for failing to provide federally mandated voter registration opportunities in violation of the National Voter Registration Act, a case called North Carolina versus Strzok. We need independent, fair-minded judges to administer the rule of law. The burden of proof is on the nominee to show that they can be an independent jurist. Mr. Farr has not met that burden, and we have deep concerns about this nomination. I feel compelled to note before I close that Farr's extensive work to undermine voting rights for African Americans is especially striking given the obstruction of two former judicial nominees, Jennifer May Parker and Patricia Timmons Goodson, who were nominated by President Obama. We observed vacancies that persisted for far too long because of efforts to stall or otherwise obstruct attempts to advance nominees to the court. It is because of this obstruction that there are so many vacancies that must be filled today. As a result, the president has the opportunity to completely reshape the judiciary. There are currently 150 vacancies across federal district and appellate courts in our country. We know that many of our civil rights battles today will be fought in the courtroom. We must be wary of this administration's attempts to stack the courts with radical, racially polarizing nominees like Thomas Farr, who fall outside the mainstream of legal thought. Thomas Farr is emblematic of the kind of dangerous nominee who must be rejected by the Senate. I'm going to turn the floor over now to Reverend Barber.
Hello, this is Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II, the former president of the North Carolina NAACP and now the president of Repairs of the Breach and the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. I've lived in North Carolina virtually all of my life. And the legacy of Tom Farr is infamous. He has been a leading force in attempting to put white nationalist and white supremacist policy into law. He's been the leading force in the regression of fundamental voting rights. He has been the lead litigator arguing for surgically racist voter suppression laws and racist district gerrymandering maps that have been struck down by the courts, as recent as the unanimous striking down of racist gerrymandering and racist voter suppression laws by the Roberts Court, unanimously, something that very rarely happens. And the kind of laws that Farr has fought for was far deeper than just photo ID. It was the worst form of photo ID that we've seen in the nation, the worst voter suppression since the Shelby decision in 2013. He was a part of a case that wanted to take away the right for 16 to 18 year olds to pre-register, to remove same day registration, to remove early voting. On and on, his policies have been racist policies, surgical racism that would hurt black people, brown people, and even women. And when you look at his infamous record, to place Tom Farr, a lawyer who has time and time again been wrong on the Constitution, wrong on equal protection under the law, wrong according to even the Roberts courts, to now place him onto the Eastern Federal Court bench is, in fact, to put the fox in charge of the hen house. It is to trust with judicial power a lawyer that has defended and designed the racist voting policy of white supremacists and white nationalist ideology. It is to put a lawyer who has spent his career fighting against justice and equal protection under the laws over a federal district that is in an area called the Black Belt of North Carolina, an area where more than 30% of all African Americans in North Carolina live, and as has been said, has never had an African-American justice in the history of this republic, which means the Eastern District Court looks like the civil rights movement never happened. And many of us in North Carolina know that there was almost an unspoken rule that traces back to Jesse Hams that said that district would never have an African American. The Supreme Court just ruled unanimously against Farr cases. And now his award for trying to take voting rights is to award him a seat on the federal court to do more bad and racist interpretation of the Constitution is just wrong. But he cannot be blamed alone. The blame lies with Senator Burr and Senator Tillis, who blocked two black women from even getting a hearing. And it should be noted that one of these African-American women was a former state Supreme Court justice. We also should note that the same senators that are now pushing Farr would not support Loretta Lynch from North Carolina. Two senators who have proven by their actions that they support white supremacy, they support racist voter suppression laws, and also stand chauvinistically and racially against black women. And this should be pointed out when we talk about white nationalism, we cannot, white supremacy, we cannot just have a conversation when, in fact, we have a hateful situation like what happened in Charlottesville, because you can actually be anti-hate. Burr and Tillis have spoken out against the hate in Charlottesville, but you can be anti-hate and still be a supporter of the policies of white supremacy and white nationalism. White nationalism and white supremacy support voter suppression, and so does Tom Farr, and by we're pushing for him, so does Tillis and Burr. Lastly, it should be known, as has been said, that Tom Ellis was Jesse Hams' chief deputy. He mentored Tom Farr. Hams flamed the fan of white racism to spur racialized voting starting in the 1950s all the way through to the 1990s. Hams opposed school segregation and the enactment of civil rights laws. He believed, and Ellis did, and along with him, believed in the inferiority of people of color. Were members of the Citizen Council of Conservative Citizens, one of the White Citizens Council, a group of white supremacist organizations. So here is what the media and others must say to all these senators. First, do you oppose white supremacy? And do you support those who murder innocent young peace activists, who burn crosses in white robes and pointy hats? If you don't support them and you say you're against what you saw in Charlottesville, then you must also oppose the ascension of lawyers who work for white supremacist causes and who seek to put white nationalist policies in our interpretation of the law. You cannot say you're against white supremacist actions and white nationalism in Charlottesville and then turn around and want to put white supremacists in black robes for a lifetime federal judicial seat. America and Democrats and Republicans should stand against the appointment of Thomas Farr to the Eastern District Federal Court. Thank you so much.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Vanita Gupta. I'm president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 200 national organizations dedicated to building an America as good as its ideals. The Leadership Conference opposes the nomination of Thomas Farr to the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina. Trump's nomination of Farr is just the latest example of this administration's contempt for voting rights, for employment rights and workers' rights and civil rights and judicial independence. Mr. Farr has dedicated his 38-year legal career to the restriction of voting rights and defending employment discrimination. And there's no question, you've heard now from three different civil rights leaders about his active engagement and leadership in voter suppression efforts in North Carolina. Mr. Farr has also defended employers and corporations charged with employment discrimination throughout his legal career, and he has fought numerous times efforts to create safe working conditions for employees. Indeed, his nomination is opposed by the AFL-CIO, the largest federation of unions in the United States. It's telling that Mr. Farr's first job out of law school was actually working at an anti-union organization, the so-called National Right to Work Foundation. Mr. Farr has spoken out against workers as recently as last year when he supported a North Carolina law to prevent employees who were wrongfully discharged from bringing discrimination claims in state court. This extreme law was passed and quickly reversed by the Republican-controlled state legislature due to public pressure, but not before Mr. Farr expressed support for the law. He said, "I think it's better policy for the state." He continued to express support for the anti-worker law in his answers to written questions submitted by senators following his hearing, and his support for this law is deeply disturbing. Additionally, Mr. Farr has shown a record of extreme ideology. In a 2012 speech, Mr. Farr compared the Supreme Court case upholding the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act with two of our nation's most shameful Supreme Court decisions, Plessy versus Ferguson, which upheld separate but equal laws, and Dred Scott, which held that no person of African descent could be a U.S. citizen. In a written question following his hearing, Senator Feinstein asked Mr. Farr, in what way was the challenge to the ACA similar to Plessy versus Ferguson and Dred Scott? Mr. Farr declined to directly answer, merely responding, quote, "As a private citizen, I did not agree with the decision rendered by the Supreme Court in each of these cases." He gave similar answers to Senators Whitehouse and Coons, who also asked him about this statement. It's one thing to disagree with the Supreme Court's decision on the Affordable Care Act, but quite another to try to even compare it to the evils that were validated by the Supreme Court in those shameful 19th century decisions. Mr. Farr has dedicated his career to fighting against civil rights protections on behalf of his clients, but his personal statements and testimony demonstrate that he is not committed to upholding the rule of law or existing civil rights law, and suggest that he was chosen for this nomination specifically because of his work fighting against civil rights and advancing a deeply racist agenda. You've heard also about the two African-American women who had been nominated for this very seat. And in nominating Farr, who is white and a member of the Federalist Society since 1985, this president is trying to take advantage of all of the years of prior obstruction by appointing someone who has a proven and demonstrated record in advancing voter suppression, in defending against employment rights, and in actively battling the advancement of civil rights. Mr. Farr is, we urge the Senate Judiciary Committee to reject Thomas Farr, and we also urge everyone who cares about civil and human rights to get involved to make their voices heard in the Senate. He has dedicated his career to fight against civil rights protections on behalf of his clients, but his personal statements and testimony demonstrate that he is not committed to upholding existing civil rights law and suggest, as I said, that he was chosen specifically for his work against civil rights. I'd now like to pass it on to the next speaker. Thank you.
I'm Irving Joyner, and I serve as legal counsel to the North Carolina NAACP, and I chair its legal redress committee. At the outset, I just want to adopt and agree with all of the comments from the previous speakers. Now, with respect to Thomas Farr, as far back as 1980, he has been the lead attorney in virtually every legal action which has challenged the rights of African Americans to vote and participate in the political franchise here in North Carolina. He's not only been the legal voice, but he's been an architect and an intimate in creating the challenges and then emerging as the chief defender when those actions are challenged in court. Most recently, he has been the lead attorney in a series of legislative efforts by the North Carolina General Assembly to deny expanded and successful opportunities for African Americans to vote. These expanded opportunities have resulted in significant increases by African Americans in voter registration and political participation. Under the leadership of the Speaker of the House then, Tom Tillis, the North Carolina General Assembly enacted a monster suppression bill known as HB 589, which was determined by the court to have been passed with racially discriminatory intent in violation of the Constitution and the Voting Rights Act by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. That opinion was subsequently upheld by the full U.S. Supreme Court. And in that decision, the Fourth Circuit concluded that the Tillis-led General Assembly had acted with surgical precision to disenfranchise African-American voters. Thomas Farr first acted as an advisor to the General Assembly in proposing and rushing these laws into existence, and then became the lead counsel in a three-year unsuccessful legal battle to defend these constitutional laws. Prior to the voter suppression legislation, Farr advised the General Assembly when the state conducted its 2010 redistricting of North Carolina's House, Senate, and congressional districts. And in separate lawsuits, each of these redistricting plans were judicially determined to have discriminated against African Americans by stacking and packing African Americans into selected legislative districts. And again, Tom Farr was the lead counsel in this effort to stack and pack African Americans and to then defend this action, which has now consumed more than 6 years in trying to find some remedy. The district court and the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeal struck down that act, and we are presently involved in efforts to redistrict districts here in North Carolina. So by no stretch of the imagination should Thomas Farr be determined or looked at as being someone who can be fair, impartial, and unbiased in handling legal matters in the state. And this is very important because the Eastern District would be the front line of the court, which is likely to engage in a large number of civil rights claims in North Carolina, since the district is presently composed of roughly 30% of the population, and it is approximately 50% of the African American population here in the state of North Carolina. That closes my comments, and I think we're ready now for questions from the press.
And at this time, if you'd like to register to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. Once again, to register to ask a question, please press star 1 keys now. Keep in mind, you may remove yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. And we'll pause momentarily to give everyone an opportunity to join the question queue. Once again, it is star and 1 for any questions. And speakers, it does appear at this time we have no questions. Ms. Eiffel, I'll return the floor to you for any additional comments.
I thank you for joining this call. I would emphasize that this particular nomination is of paramount importance. In many ways, the confirmation or the failure to confirm Thomas Farr will really define whether or not the Senate is prepared to do its job, authorized under the Constitution to offer advice and consent to nominees. Thomas Farr is not only outside the mainstream, he represents a decades-long engagement with white supremacy that he has never rejected. As recently as 2007, he was lifting up his mentor, Mr. Ellis. This is a person who should not sit on the federal district court. And if the United States Senate, without regard to any partisan consideration, cannot recognize that this nomination is inappropriate for a lifetime appointment on the federal bench, then we really must question whether the Senate is prepared to fulfill its constitutional obligation to ensure that the federal bench is populated by those who have an exemplary record of legal practice, of honesty, of integrity, of service, and of an embrace of the principles of equality and justice that we have a right to expect of anyone who sits on the federal bench. This is the one, and it's important that the media and others recognize that tomorrow's hearing will tell us more than about Mr. Farr himself. It will tell us about the United States Senate, where they stand, whether they only offer lip service in opposition to white supremacy, or whether they in fact intend to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. Thank you very much for joining us, and we all would happily make ourselves available for follow-up questions if you wish to reach out individually or if you seek additional information. Thank you.